As is so often the case, again and again, Jung was a pioneer in the field of self-psychology, but because he used a strange set of terms and illustrated it with even stranger things like alchemy, and nobody paid much attention to it. But he was obviously wrestling with these same kinds of problems that seem so current in self-psychology. Now, historically, there's a book by Coward, Harold, I think is his first name, called Jung and Eastern Thought, that I have had an interesting relationship to. I didn't like it when I first read it, and I decided I would write a critical review of it for some place. So I had it all outlined and marked in yellow, highlighted, and marginal notes and so forth, and took it with me on a trip to Canada, try and get my thoughts together to write this review, and left it on the airplane. And went to great effort, phoning all over the place, to try to get it back, because it had everything my mind had thrown up about it, and couldn't get it back. And about a month later, I had gotten another copy, and had it about halfway highlighted with marginal notes, and left it in the Hertz car at the Houston airport. They did get that back to me, so I had that. But I began to feel that in the background, something was stirring, possibly Mercurius. Something was going on. So I decided not to write the critical review, and I have now come to like the book. So something was holding me back from too hasty a judgment. He basically talks about the origins of Jung's idea of the self in Eastern thought, particularly Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, and the idea of Atman, and traces a strong influence of Eastern thought. And that's probably correct. But about the time that Jung got back from India, he was into alchemy. And everything after that doesn't owe much to any kind of Eastern thought. It comes out of alchemy. It comes out of the problem of opposites. It comes out of a very westernized view of the psyche. And in Ion, in these funny diagrams, I think you could actually make a case for looking at them in various different ways. Looked at in one point of view, they look extremely like structure and distributive kinds of contents, or a pattern of complexes. Other ways they can be looked at, they seem to be a condensed, pre-existent, or final goal of the psyche. And in Ion, Jung is trying to illustrate this theme of the archetypal self in a historical process, which is perhaps one of the most difficult ways to go about it. Let's look at some of those. Maybe I can help this. Let's see. I'm pressing a button very hard. Something is supposed to be happening. It is. Yeah. Yes. Does that make it easier to see? Okay. No? Yes. This is just to point out that those first arrows can be much more complex, that it doesn't have to go around and around in a clockwise circle. You can have all these different kinds of interactions. This is not one of the Ion diagrams. This is my standard diagram of the psyche from a Jungian point of view. It's not up here because you don't know these terms. I just simply want to talk about something slightly different. If you see this, which is very familiar, and it's split up into ego, that's the I, and there at the bottom is the archetypal self, or the central archetype of order, or the basis of the ego, and that dotted line is something like ego-self axis, or ego-self spiration, or some kind of special connection between ego and self, archetypal self. And there's the persona, the outer boundary, the role-playing way of relating to the world that is necessary and good if it's not too thick or too thin. It fits right, and there is the shadow, based on the archetype of Lamont Cranston, and it's simply an alter ego. It could just as well have been ego, but it is a content that's in the shadow, is only in the shadow, because that ego at some time decided it should not be in the ego or the persona. There can be perfectly good things, workable things, even life-saving things in the shadow. And no one here needs to be reminded of that, I'm sure. The shadow may have very positive qualities in it. But it appears to be negative because part of the ego, at one time or another, decided that was not good, made, in essence, a moral judgment about it. So that content got dissociated into the shadow. And then there is the dread anima and animus, you know, the basis of all afternoon and prime time these days, stories about Dallas and other places. And there are the contents, the complexes and the archetypes. Archetypes, a tendency to structure, and complexes, the structure that has been formed out of the experience that the archetypes tended to put in a certain form. Now, this is all familiar. I simply want to suggest to you that there are several principles upon which this distribution into that familiar form takes place. One is that the persona, the ego, and the shadow seem to be differentiated on the basis of what is considered to be good and what is considered to be bad. Something can be put in the shadow because it's judged to be bad. It can be judged to be good and can be put in the ego. It can be judged to be good for people to think it's there and put in the persona or in the role. But the judgment, the principle of judgment, is about good or bad. The essential principle between persona, ego, shadow as one unit and anima, animus is a sexual distinction. Is it male? Is it female? And that has a lot of cultural influence on it and so forth. But good and evil, male and female, personal or transcendent would be the third. Because once you get outside the circle and down into the depths of the collective unconscious or the objective psyche, then you're beyond the realm of the ego.